WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Tuesday, May 31st, 2016. That's right, the final day in the month, folks. Don't forget to pay the rent, all right? Welcome to the show, though. We've got a fun-filled hour of sports talk for you, all right? Of course, our phone lines are open just like they are each and every weekday here on the show. If you want to call in to be a part of the show, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. On today's show, of course, we will recap what took place out in the Bay last night as the Golden State Warriors now make it back-to-back trips to the NBA Finals, topping the Oklahoma City Thunder in seven games. We will chat about that series. Also, the Detroit Tigers are on a three-game losing streak and doing it against lowly teams in the MLB. So we'll talk about what exactly is going wrong with the Detroit Tigers. We will also invite former Current Sports production assistant Jason Ruff to the show, who will be calling in with a special 2 minutes for Ruffing, as not only were the NBA playoffs going on last night, but also it was the opening game of the Stanley Cup Finals. So you don't want to miss that chat. And also on the back end of the show, we will talk about a resignation at Baylor University. And we'll hit you with weekend winners. So again, call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. But without further ado, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, let's start with news concerning the Michigan and Michigan State baseball teams. Yes, both the Wolverines and the Spartans were left out of the NCAA field of 64. The Wolverines had the second highest ratings percentage index, or RPI, in the Big Ten Conference, behind only conference tournament champ Ohio State, but had a lousy finish to the regular season. Michigan State also limped home in the regular season, losing 5 of 6 entering the Big Ten tournament. The Spartans, who haven't made the NCAA tourney since 2012, needed the championship to make it, given their low RPI of just 77. The only team to make the tournament from the good state of Michigan is Western Michigan. Yes, the winner of the Mid-American Conference tournament. The Broncos open Friday night against regional host Louisville. St. Joseph defensive end Corey Maloney Hatcher will be announcing his college decision at 3:30 p.m. on Thursday at his high school. He revealed that news via Twitter. Now, he announced his finalists, a list that reveals his status, such as Michigan, Michigan State, Alabama, Ohio State, Tennessee, UCLA, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, and Penn State. Yes, everyone wants this young man to play for their respective school. At 6'3", 246 pounds, Maloney Hatcher is a 4-star weak side defensive end ranked as the number 17 prospect at his position and number 247 overall on 247 Sports, and also the number 6 football player coming out of the state of Michigan. So Thursday at 3:30, Maloney Hatcher will make that decision. The U of M satellite camp, yeah, they will debut tonight out in Naperville, Illinois, from 5 to 8 p.m. at the North Central College football camp. The camp is scheduled to include U of M staff along with Iowa State coach Matt Campbell and his assistants and the North Central College staff. Now, Jim Harbaugh's name is not listed and his photo is not with the other coaches on the registration form, so it's unclear whether or not he will be in attendance. U of M also will work with Iowa State staff at a June 14th camp in Texas. Now, this appearance would push U of M's camp total to, get this, 39 in 22 states, plus American Samoa and Australia. All right, and the number 2 ranked University of Michigan softball team, scored four runs in the top of the seventh inning to earn a wild 5-4 comeback win against number 17 Missouri and claim an NCAA Super Regional sweep on Sunday afternoon in front of a crowd of a little over 2,000 fans at Wilpine Complex at Alumni Field. Now, with the victory, the Wolverines advanced to the Women's College World Series for the 12th time in program history and the third time in four seasons. Talk about domination, right? The Detroit Tigers, folks, Julius Chachin twirled his best start of the season and got the offensive outburst he needed as the LA Angels knocked off the Detroit Tigers 5-1 in the first game of a three-game homestand on Monday. Tigers righty Justin Verlander nearly matched Chachin pitch for pitch, but not surrendering his first base runner until the fifth and striking out seven. Absolutely lights out, but JV still gets the loss. The Tigers have now lost three straight. Anibal Sanchez tries for his first win since April 28th when he takes the ball for the middle game of the series at 10:05 p.m. Eastern time tonight. And Sanchez lost a 2-0 game to Hector Santiago at Angel Stadium during the Tigers' visit there last May. Detroit Pistons point guard Reggie Jackson throwing some shade, folks. Yeah, he used a simple tweet to apparently reveal his thoughts on the outcome of the NBA's Western Conference Finals. Minutes after the Golden State Warriors defeated his former team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, in Game 7 on Monday night, Jackson tweeted, "Just a smirking emoji." All right? Yeah, read into that what you want, all right? The Thunder blew a 3-1 series lead in the best of seven series. So, yeah, he just tweeted out an emoji, but, hey, you can read into that, all right? And last, but certainly, not least, I want to talk about the Stanley Cup Finals. You got to mention that, hey, in a game filled with wild momentum swings, Nick Bonino, he scored with 2:33 remaining to give the Pittsburgh Penguins a 3-2 win over the San Jose Sharks in Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. Game 2 takes place on Wednesday night. And again, folks, keep it locked right here. We will invite our hockey expert on the show, Jason Ruff, for a special 2 Minutes for Ruffing Stanley Cup edition, all right? And Baylor University announced on Monday that its athletic director had resigned amid an ongoing sexual assault scandal that had tarnished the school's reputation and led to the dismissal, I should say, of a successful football coach. Now, a little more than an hour before Ian McCaw's resignation was made official, Baylor announced that it had hired former Wake Forest coach Jim Grobe to replace Art Briles. Grobe was named acting coach, with no mention of how long of a contract he will receive. But Baylor University has announced that its AD is now kaput. All right, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, I do believe it's about that time to start the show. Welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. I am your host of WKAR's current sports, Al Martin. And man, oh man, do I look like a complete idiot here on Tuesday, May 31st, 2016. Gosh, man, I just can't believe that the Thunder, in my opinion, just completely just handed the series to the Golden State Warriors. If there was any opportunity for them to close things out, it was, to me, in Game 6. Because, let's be real here, playing a Game 7 in Roracle Arena in front of that ruckus crowd, yeah, the cards were certainly stacked against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So now, the Golden State Warriors will head to the NBA Finals for the second straight year to meet up with a rematch of last year's finals against LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Really looking forward to this series, folks. Really looking forward to it. Before we dive into a bit of a preview of the Cavs and Warriors, you know, I got to get this off my chest. Going back to Game 6, I was watching Game 6. And entering the fourth quarter, again, the Thunder are at home. Momentum on their side. They actually had an 8-point lead to start the fourth quarter. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, I was tweeting throughout the game, and I sat there and said to myself, there is no way that the Thunder are letting this one go. No way. I actually, you know, put myself on blast and said, bye-bye, Warriors. That's exactly what I tweeted, folks. Exactly my exact tweet. And then Steph Curry said, not so fast, Al. Also, besides Curry, how about Klay Thompson, right? Setting an NBA record for most threes in an NBA postseason game with 11. Absolutely unbelievable. But hey, you can only point the finger to two individuals, in my opinion. You know, they get so much credit when the Thunder win, but hey, if you lose, they got to get some of that credit as well. And for me, I just thought that Kevin Durant down the stretch of that game and Russell Westbrook, they played ugly, folks. KD, actually, looking at Game 6, let's look at the stats right here. 10 of 31, he shot 40.9%. He was 1 for 7 for 4 points in the fourth quarter of Game 6. And the Thunder actually turned the ball over 6 times in the final 5 minutes. That is absolutely something you cannot do against the Golden State Warriors, because they will burn you each and every time if you just hand them the basketball. KD forced up a three-pointer early in the shot clock with about 3 minutes left to go. In a tie game at that, so ideally you want to get a better shot than that, right? Russell Westbrook had a play where he stumbled, got the ball back, seemed to regain composure. Then he stumbles again. Again, it's midway through the shot clock, so he should have just kicked it out to a teammate and reset, right? He doesn't. Tries to do an MJ fadeaway, turnaround. Andre Iguodala strips him, another turnover. I mean, there's countless times this happened in the last 5 minutes of that game that led to the Thunder demise. And after the Warriors came back and won that Game 6, all momentum completely went to the Warrior side, folks. Actually, the home teams are now 101-24. Talk about a glaring stat, right? Home teams, 101-24 in Game 7s. And teams that actually lost Game 6 after having a 3-1 series lead are 12-24 all time in a Game 7. So the big question now, looking forward, is what in the world will Mr. KD, Kevin Durant, do? Will he lead the team and break up the Batman and Robin tandem that he has currently with Russell Westbrook? Now, when looking at his contract numbers, folks, Kevin Durant right now has a max contract of $25.9 million. With the league salary cap expected to go up next year, okay? Now, as far as the situation with the Thunder goes, let's play the numbers game really briefly. He could sign a 5-year, $149 million contract if he decides to return to the Thunder. That's a projection right now via ESPN stats and information. And his max contract, if he leaves, is projected to be around $111 million over the span of 4 years. So he could get paid more if he stays. But again, with the influx of the new NBA contract and, you know, the salary cap moving up, again, these are just projections as of right now via ESPN. So I don't know. You know, I feel as though, and I've always questioned whether or not Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook can win a championship together. I've always thought that at times out there on the floor, it becomes a 2-5 show, and they force up a lot of shots. Sometimes their respective games clash on the court. Russell wants to get his. Russell wants to be the guy. Kevin Durant wants to be the guy. That balance is off sometimes. But on that same conversation, they got past the Spurs, and they had a 3-1 series lead over the 73-9 Golden State Warriors. So riddle me that, folks. Riddle me that. I don't know if he's going to return. I want to know what you think, though. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's current sports, hailing from New Orleans. How you doing, Isaac Constance? You all right?
Hey, yeah, late night of basketball yesterday for me, so I'm feeling a little under the weather. A little bit of coffee would probably help me out as well. But Kevin Durant, I don't know what to say, because I think that this is a team with so much potential. I think the duo of Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook is the best duo in the league. I don't think that Curry and Thompson even match the two in terms of what those guys bring to all facets of the game. I mean, yeah, Curry and Thompson are the better three-point shooting duo, but when I see the way that Russell Westbrook facilitates and controls the entire flow of the game, I can't remember a time that Russell Westbrook has missed and the defense has then gone on to score. It seems like he's always getting a steal, always getting an offensive rebound, something like that. And Kevin Durant, in many ways, took the sidekick role last night, which is why I think was the problem. It's that Kevin Durant might be the worst overall player, in my opinion. I take Russell Westbrook over Kevin Durant. I know that's a bold claim, but I say it.
Hold on. I got to go back to what you just said. You think that Kevin Durant is the worst overall player in the league today?
Worse than Russell Westbrook.
Okay, there we go. Clarify that. Okay.
Worst of the two.
Okay, gotcha. Worst of the two. All right, let's clarify that. Proceed. All right.
But I think he's the better scorer. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that when it comes to crunch time, Kevin Durant was 10 of 19 last game.
Yeah.
He had 11 shots into the fourth quarter. That was not enough. And he was 7 of 11. He was on fire. He led and captained that comeback. I thought that Billy Donovan had outcoached Steve Kerr for 5 of 7 games this series. And he didn't when it mattered most. Last night... Kevin Durant needed to command the ball and show that he was Batman offensively. Didn't happen, and, you know, I thought the other problem was Game 5. I traced it all the way back to that. We mentioned this might be the best team of all time. Now, if they will have lost this series, no, that claim goes out the window. But when you've got the best team of all time cornered, you got to kill them off. That's got to be the game. So I thought Game 5, even, was when the Thunder had to close the door and shore it up. They didn't do that, and then you just saw Golden State get more and more momentum, and yeah, it was the Thunder who let it up. I don't think Kevin Durant should go anywhere personally, because obviously this is one of the best teams we've seen in a little while to compete like the Warriors the way they did. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they need to resolve that Batman and Robin thing and establish who's who.
And I just don't know if now, don't get me wrong, because there was a moment that really speaks to the relationship that both Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook shares. If you remember when Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks, came out and said that Russell Westbrook is not a superstar in today's league, the question was asked via press conference when both of them were up there sitting, and you know, it looked as though Russell Westbrook was going to answer the question. Kevin Durant said, "No. Mm-mm. I got your back. He's an idiot." Quote unquote, he's an idiot. So these are two guys that I believe like each other, and they love playing with one another. But I just think at the end of the day, KD would be crazy not to look at what else is out there. He's not won an NBA championship yet. He's got all the talent in the world. Same thing with Russell Westbrook. If I had to choose between the two, it would be tough for me. That would be a tough decision because Kevin Durant is so lengthy. He's a freak out there, okay? He's 6'11". He's got this crazy wingspan, and he can do everything. Russell Westbrook, I think, will go down as the most athletic basketball player in the history of the game. He's that good. So they both bring different things to the table. But I've always questioned whether or not those two can really work together cohesively and have a balance between each other's games, but with also a balance with getting their respective teammates involved. And that's sometimes, I just feel like it's the Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook show, and they just forget about everyone else on the team. How many times did we see Westbrook or Durant in the later part of this series just throw up shots? Yep. Left and right, we saw that. You know what I mean? And that's what's so remarkable, though, about the Golden State Warriors. They get everyone involved. There was a point in that series where people were questioning where in the heck is Steph Curry because everyone else seemed to get theirs except Steph. I mean, and Steph is that type of player. He can facilitate. And I will say this, though. Russell Westbrook has gotten better as a facilitating guard.
He has.
Later on in his career. But I just don't know if those two will ever be able to work together within the means of that relationship while also making sure that their team doesn't get sidetracked, okay? I don't know. So when you look at the money now, again, ideally right now, again, these are projections. Kevin Durant, if he decides to stay, you're looking at a five-year, $149, $150 million contract. If he goes, based on what the projections are for the rest of the league, for those that have the money, you're looking at a max contract of about $111 million over the span of 4 years. So, I don't know. What do you think Kevin Durant will do? I mean, he was asked 27 minutes after they lost that game seven what he's going to do. And, of course, he's going to give you the cliche answer. Well, we just lost game seven. I need time to think about it. But if you are Kevin Durant, what do you think? What options do you think he will weigh? And what do you think the eventual decision will be?
I don't expect a 3-minute re-sign just like Anthony Davis got to, you know, perch up my pelican somehow in this, but just like Anthony Davis did over the offseason, I don't expect that. I expect Kevin Durant to drag out this process because why not? That's how you're going to get the most attention for future endorsement deals, the most money, and that's how you can almost collaborate behind closed doors and say, hey, buddy, if you want to come this way, then that'll strongly make me consider this option. Mm-hmm. So I think Kevin Durant himself is still unsure. He's waiting not to see where he goes, but where everybody else goes before he decides so that he can make the best option for himself. But personally, I think he should stay. I think
this is a team that
you can't get any closer to beating possibly the best team of all time than the Thunder came. You can't. And if you're that close, you do think you're one team away. You're one tweak away. Mm-hmm. You are seriously just one half piece missing. And I'm going to sound like an idiot saying this to most basketball fans, but Deion Waiters is a good player now.
Oh, Deion Waiters. I don't think you sound like an idiot saying that. Deion Waiters has come a long way as well.
He has, and he's a good passer. He's making smart decisions. I think he could be that sixth man that finally replaces the void that James Harden left mm-hmm. when he eventually went to Houston. So I think the Thunder just need to get another scorer on that team, another guys to get some shots up, because what I found the problem to be was it's KD and Russ, and you post KD up. If you can't get him the ball, then Russ calls everybody up, tries to run an ISO, and if that doesn't work, then you bail out and give it to another player with mm-hmm. 5 seconds on the shot clock. That's why the shooting numbers look lower for everybody because you've got two options.
Right.
Compare that to the Warriors where it's all these screen and rolls, all these off-ball screens and different types of screens too. You've got flanks. You've got flare screens.
Of course.
You've got the traditional. You've got pick and pops. All sorts of things to get the shooters open but also give them options once they get the ball.
For me, you stay. That's just my opinion. Kevin Durant, again, and it's so crazy. When looking at the last, 4 or 5 years, when the Thunder have gotten close and made a deep run in the playoffs, they have lost to the eventual NBA champion, I believe, 3 times in the last 4 years. That's crazy. You know, so when you're going out, at least you're going out. If you're going to go out, you lose to the best, right? So it's interesting, folks. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And you all know that I am probably the biggest Michael Jordan fan you'll ever meet in your life. So it was certainly a catch-22 for me watching the Golden State Warriors this year go 73-9 and top the Chicago Bulls' fame record of 72-10, right? Yeah. And when you look at this, though, now I just want to throw this out there. This is for all the Michael Jordan and Chicago Bulls fans out there, right? Because I just saw this statistic. After, I believe this was the loss, the latest loss that the Thunder had to make it a 3-1 series, right? After that loss, the Warriors, it made it virtually impossible for the Warriors to top the 95-96 Bulls combined regular and postseason win percentage of 87%. Even if they were to win the next seven games and going to win the NBA championship. So even if the Warriors were to sweep LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers in the upcoming NBA Finals this week, we start this week, I should say, there's no way that the Warriors can eclipse the 87% win percentage that the Bulls had in 95-96. So at the same time, for those that want to make an argument that the Bulls are better than this year's Warriors, you can throw that out there. That's just a little tidbit, okay? 87%?
Amazing.
That's crazy.
Amazing.
That's a crazy win percentage.
That's averaging 9 wins every 10 games, essentially. That is right. Unheard of. But my question to pose would be, does this actually make the Warriors even more impressive? To
how?
Come back
explain that.
3-1.
Yeah.
To
well,
battle and be so resilient to come back from a hole that only 8 teams had before mm-hmm. and say, you know what?
The 9 teams. Yeah, I think they're the 10th
now.
Oh,
9. Mm-hmm. Okay. But to say, we ain't going home yet. And then, again, in Game 7, after you win it with a game-winning shot to put you up 10, to say to that same fan, we ain't going home yet. That was so cool.
This is one
of the best series that I've ever seen, first of all.
Oh,
to see
fantastic.
The chippiness, yeah. the combativeness of the different players.
Right.
And then after the series, to see nobody walk off the court all sullen and all, you know, shaken by the loss, to see Kevin Durant, who just called out Steph Curry's defense two games ago or whatever, shake his hand and Steph to smile at him after
it was
behind
all love.
The back.
Yeah, it was
yeah.
all love.
Same with Draymond, same with Steven Adams.
And you don't see that often. You don't see that often at all. And I you know me, I'm an old school basketball guy, so I love when guys hate each other when they step on the court. The NBA is way too lovey-dovey now, okay? It's way too buddy this, buddy that. So when you see some genuine dislike, I love it, and I feed off that stuff when watching it. So, and we saw that throughout the series multiple times.
And they left it all on the floor, too.
They did.
That's the most important part. They didn't take it into some cheap locker room game.
So now, moving forward, the Warriors will take on the Cavs, who are a rematch of last year's NBA Finals. LeBron James, the King, is playing in his 6th straight NBA Finals. That is absolutely insane in the membrane. And there's a few... There's multiple areas you can go with this conversation. We all saw what LeBron James was able to do last year. I mean, it was one of the greatest NBA Finals performances by just single performances by one man that we've ever seen. I mean, LeBron tried to put the Cavs on his back and lead them to a chip by himself, and he almost pulled it off, folks. But again, eventually the Warriors won that series 4-2. But now LeBron has his boys with him. Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving are healthy, and they look pretty good, folks. So this is going to be a much different series, I think. And again, there's so many ways we can go with this conversation. You know, when you look at the Eastern Conference, I don't know if the Cleveland Cavaliers have faced enough adversity on their way to the finals. Don't get me wrong. Again, they swept my Pistons, right? Swept the Hawks. I mean, Toronto made it interesting, but they eventually beat them. They get all this rest. I don't know if their road to this point has been tough enough to not get shell-shocked against the Warriors. I don't know. That's a question. Andre Iguodala, though, that's going to be that matchup between Iguodala and LeBron James. Is Andre Iguodala up to the challenge of dealing with LeBron James again? That's another question mark I have. And, you know, Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, what kind of impact will those two have on this series, seeing as though they were absent last year? Those are the questions I want to pose. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite the one, the only, Jason Ruff, to the show for a special 2 minutes for Roughing as we recap Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, Memorial Day weekend marks the beginning of summer here in the United States of America, all right? It also marks the beginning of the end of the NHL season. That's right. Game 1 took place last night against the San Jose Sharks and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals. And, you know, this cup will certainly be a refreshing one for hockey fans out there, seeing as though the Penguins have not played in a cup final since the day they won the Stanley Cup back in 2009. And the San Jose Sharks are making their first appearance in the cup finals in franchise history. Remarkable stuff, right? History being made between these two franchises. And right now we invite our now former current sports production assistant who is now tearing it up at an internship out in Chicago, Illinois, my man 50 grand, Jason Ruff. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Al. Happy summer, happy Memorial Day weekend to you. And how about those Warriors, huh?
Well, I know, right? Coming back from 3-1. That's what we've been talking about the entire first segment, man. First off, Jason, how you doing out there? I know you're from the Chi, and I know you are interning out at CBS. In Chicago?
ABC 7,
I'm sorry. How is it going out there, dude?
You know, it's going really well. You know, learning a lot and getting a lot of good experience. I couldn't be happier right now.
Well, we are definitely happy for you, my friend. So let's dive right into it and waste no time here. Again, Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals took place last night between the Penguins and the Sharks. The Penguins ended up pulling it out 3-2 last night, and I'm sure you were watching that one, Jason. First off, I want to throw this out there to you. How shocked are you that we are currently watching these two teams out of everyone else in the Stanley Cup Finals?
You know, Pittsburgh, I'm not really that shocked. They really came on at the end of the season. And honestly, I told you, I think before school ended, they were one of my favorites to make the finals. San Jose, though, is really the shocker. I was really surprised how well they handled their business against St. Louis. And they just up their game to a whole nother level, and it's paying dividends for them right now. And they're in their first Stanley Cup final in franchise history, and you know what? Good for them. This is kind of what the game needs. You know, you get some of the older powers that get into it year after year, it kind of comes stale. It comes like Alabama making the college football playoff. Well, everyone knows that. Everyone wants to see someone else get into the final game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think this is good for the game. You know, every few years you have some new guys who haven't been there for a while or haven't been there, period, duking it out for, in my opinion, the best trophy in all of sports.
Now, again, this is the Sharks' very first appearance in the Stanley Cup Finals in franchise history, Jason. What clicked for this team this year?
I'm sorry?
What clicked for the Sharks this year, Jason? Again, they're making their very first appearance in Stanley Cup playoff history. What does this mean for them to finally make the finals? First time in franchise history.
I think it's validation of their program. And, you know, Al, hockey, like in a lot of other sports, as soon as you get hot, you're hot. And San Jose was able to find a way to get hot. They had a good opponent against Anaheim. I think it was in the either first or second round. I don't remember off the top of my head. Seems like an eon ago when we were talking first or second round. But they really started gaining steam, and it was really against St. Louis, where the Sharks really started to show that mentality or that let everyone know, hey, they could win the Stanley Cup. So it's they were a team that peaked at the right time, essentially. You know, you talk about, you know, the NCAA basketball tournament or in the NBA playoffs or anywhere else of teams peaking at the right time. San Jose is a team that peaked right at the right time. similar to the Penguins in some regards.
Yes, that is so true. And, you know, when looking at the run that the Sharks have had throughout the playoffs, the Sharks actually lead the NHL in the playoffs in nearly every offensive category. They've scored 63 goals in 18 postseason games and also have a terrifying power play, which is currently operating at a 27% clip, which is very impressive stuff. Now, when mentioning the Penguins here, Jason, the Penguins fired Mike Johnston and hired Mike Sullivan. Why was that a move that needed to be made? Because it seemed as though when that fire and hire was made, the second half seemed to really bloom for this Penguins team.
Well, you know as well as I do that there's always that when you get a new coach, there's that honeymoon period where everyone buys in, and if people buy in, they buy him. And just look at Michigan over in Ann Arbor with Jim Harbaugh. That's a perfect example.
Right.
But, you know, if you look at the Penguins the last 5 years, ever since they last won the Cup in 2009, Sidney Crosby was going through concussion issues. The team never really played to its potential. And when you supposedly have the, quote-unquote, the next one, the greatest hockey player since Wayne Gretzky, which I don't necessarily agree with that claim, but that's another topic. You know, there was a lot of unanswered questions in Pittsburgh, and they felt they needed to make a change. They made the change, and it's really paying dividends for them now. Everyone's buying in. Crosby's buying in. Malkin's buying in. They have a young goaltender who's playing lights out right now. Here's the other thing, Al. You've got two goaltenders right now who are making their first ever Stanley Cup final appearance. I mean, this is the stuff you dream about as a kid, and I thought both goaltenders played solid that first game. I was actually really surprised.
You know, it's interesting you bring up that point, Jason, because anytime you have a young goaltender on a stage like this, I mean, again, the biggest stage in hockey, right? And you have, you know, you have this mentality kind of as a young player who's playing it for the first time that, you know, hey, I'm here, I'm just going to let my hair hang out and just do my thing. Instead of just looking at, okay, this is the Stanley Cup Finals, I had, you know, just looking at it from a pressure standpoint. Sometimes when you're young, you don't understand the moment, which kind of relaxes you, right?
It sometimes does, but at the other end of the coin, or the other side of the coin, you know, you could overthink things like, oh my God, this is the Stanley Cup Final, this is what I dreamed about as a kid.
Right.
And you don't play well, you let in easy shots. I mean, sometimes that happens. I'll be honest, Al, I was kind of anticipating we'd see a scoring fest right here until both goaltenders settled in. I was happily surprised. We saw a really good game by both sides. And I'll be honest, that first half of the first period, I thought San Jose looked like the quicker team. Then all of a sudden, Pittsburgh got a few goals going, and then I just turned to my dad as I was watching the game. Like, San Jose better rally here and make sure they don't get blown out here. But to the Sharks' credit, they fought back and made a really good game of it into the third period. Pittsburgh just got the last laugh. I think this is going to be a really entertaining and fun series to watch.
So we saw a 3-2 final in favor of the Penguins last night. Pittsburgh now has a 1-0 series lead with game two taking place tomorrow night. Who has the edge in this thing, Jason?
I think it's too close to call right now, Al. I think the teams are really similar. If I give experience the edge, I would say maybe Pittsburgh, just because they have a few more guys who, you know, been there and won the Stanley Cup and been to the final. But honestly, you mentioned San Jose's offense and their power play clicking at over 25%. That's going to win them a lot of games. So I think it's neck and neck right now. Honestly, I think this series could go 6 or 7.
6 or 7. Okay, give us a prediction. You know I got to put you on the spot.
Oh, my gosh. Al, you're killing me.
I do
here.
It to you every okay. time, brother.
Okay, I'll give you this, but I need to ask you a quick question I've been dying to ask you.
Okay.
Okay. My prediction for this series, I'm going to go Pens and Penguins in 7.
Okay, Penguins in 7. Gotcha.
Okay, and
I like
my
that.
Question.
Okay, what's
here's
your question?
My question for you. Now that we have Cavaliers and Warriors in the finals, the Warriors coming back from 3-1, that series right there, does that add to the whole mythos that this Warriors team ranks among the greatest NBA teams of all time, or do they need the championship and to knock off LeBron James again in order for that mythos to be secured?
Well, first off, to answer the question flat out, they needed a championship to validate it. I don't think you can go 73-9 in the regular season and not win a championship come playoff time and say that, yeah, we're the greatest to ever do it. No, you have to finish the deal. And I always bring this up. Michael Jordan, he actually tweeted at Steph Curry when they did break that Bulls record and said, hey, congratulations on the record. And he kind of threw a small bit of shade when he said, Now let's see what you guys do in the playoffs, because it's all about finishing the deal and winning the entire enchilada. So if the Warriors don't close this thing out and they lose to the Cleveland Cavaliers, no, there is no way you can call them the greatest team in NBA history. You can, they're in that conversation, but they're not that team. And when looking at this matchup, though, Jason, there's so many different ways you could go with it, because, again, now LeBron James, you know, first off, LeBron James, you can make an argument that this is a man who has the most pressure out of any player in the NBA on a year-to-year basis, because when you hear the word LeBron James, you expect him to go to the finals and win the whole thing. And if he doesn't, he's bashed. Simple as that.
Exactly.
You know, and that starts with the whole going back to the whole decision thing when he decided to go, you know, to Miami and become the league's villain. So LeBron finally has a healthy roster this year, and where he has, you know, he has Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving alongside with him. But, you know, to flat out answer your question, though, if the Warriors don't finish the deal, no, you can't say that they're the greatest team to ever play.
I tend to agree with you, and I definitely agree that LeBron has the most pressure on him, especially this year, because he loses to Steph Curry twice. You could make that argument that he's no longer, quote-unquote, the face of the NBA. You could make the argument that if he loses twice in a row to Steph Curry and the Warriors, that the king has been dethroned. You could make that argument.
Yeah, that's so true, and you can't turn on your television now without seeing the number 30 somewhere, right?
Exactly.
All right, Jason, so your prediction, man, that's probably the first time we've ever had Jason on the show where he's transitioned from hockey to basketball, and I didn't have to push him that way. So that's never happened.
You know, hey, you know, you never know what you're going to get.
I'm telling you, man, life is like a box of chocolates, right? All right, Jason, before we get you out of here, dude, key players to watch in this series between the Sharks and the Penguins.
You know, I really like Bodino for the Pens, game-winning goal. Last night, he scored the game-winning goal in another series. And for the Sharks, I'm going to have to go with George Thornton and that crazy beard of his.
Nice.
That crazy beard of his. But, of course, you can't overestimate the importance of both goaltenders, rookie goaltenders. Are they both going to settle in? Is one of them going to crack under this pressure? How are these rookie netminders going to respond, especially, let's say, if they get down a game or two games in the series? How is that pressure going to mount?
Yeah,
it's going to be real intriguing to see.
And I must say, you know, I complimented how San Jose offensively has been this year, but the Penguins actually outshot San Jose 41-26 overall and 33-13 in the first and third periods combined. And it marked the 10th consecutive game in which they have outshot their opponents. So Pittsburgh is clearly the aggressor so far in this very early portion of the series, Jason.
Yeah, definitely. They live and die by that mantra. Nothing bad happens when you throw the puck to the net, and you're seeing why.
All right, my man Jason Ruff. Jason, thanks so much for your time this afternoon. You take care out there, all right?
You do. Thanks so much for having me on, Alex. Keep doing your thing.
You got it, brother. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports with less than, 15 minutes remaining as we talk about the situation out in Baylor. As the AD has resigned, and also we'll have weekend winners for you. That and so much more. Don't go anywhere. Girl, you're shining like a Fifth Avenue diamond, and they don't make you like they used to. You're never going out of style. Ooh, pretty baby, this world might have gone crazy. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. You know, Isaac, I want to throw this story out there as well, because this is breaking news this morning concerning the Detroit Red Wings. The city of Detroit may have missed out on millions of dollars from Olympia Entertainment as a part of revenue from the Red Wings cable TV agreements. This is coming from the Detroit Free Press. Joe Guillen of the Freep wrote this article this morning. It goes on to say a 1999 sublease between Olympia and Detroit, and the Detroit Red Wings, I should say, states that the Red Wings would be responsible for paying the city a 25% share of the team's annual cable TV revenues under certain conditions. During the years of contentious discussions before a 2014 settlement, Olympia consistently maintained that it owed the city no TV revenue. since the TV deals were with the Red Wings and not with Olympia. Legal experts say the existence of this sublease might have weakened Olympia's claim. So you have a period here where when it comes to Detroit Red Wings games and where they're broadcasted, you have a period where if the city of Detroit had this partnership with Olympia, the Red Wings would have been responsible for paying the city 25% of the annual cable revenues. But that did not happen. And as I stated in that last graph, the TV deals were with the Red Wings and not with Olympia, so that the legal experts are claiming that, yeah, that just weakened Olympia's state and the city of Detroit's claim in this whole thing. So the city of Detroit may not see any money from this, and that's a big boo-boo if that does not pan out.
Yeah, that's a huge blow. I'm not a legal expert or anything, even though I am a political science double major, not that far along just yet. But, I mean, that would be a big blow. I more just find it comical, though, that subleases are still a thing once you get all the way to the professional levels of sports. Because yeah, I've got a sublease right now, and I thank you for the reminder. I got to pay the due right now.
Exactly, right? But and get this, as far as that money, so 25%, if they did the math here, and, you know, a few details are really available about the Red Wings TV contracts, but the city estimated in 2014 that its share might have been as high as $80 million. So that's $80 million just gone.
Well, that's something I understand. Wow.
Wow, that's crazy stuff. All right, folks, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. The Detroit Tigers, folks, have not been playing well. Not been playing well in this in against teams that they should be beating. Yesterday, they lost 5-1 Monday night to the LA Angels. Justin Verlander had a great outing, and then things kind of went awry. 5-1, three straight now for the Detroit Tigers against the latest loss coming against the Angels. Isaac, again, we say this every single week. The Detroit Tigers are really still in the beginning portions of their respective season. But at the same time, whenever you see the Tigers go through a stretch of losing baseball, people tend to overreact. That's what we do. That's the entity that we are in right now, especially on sports talk radio. They had a stretch where they played the Minnesota Twins, and that began a winning streak for the team. They struggled against the Oakland A's, the series before this series began against the LA Angels. And you kind of felt the feeling, you know, when they played the Minnesota Twins, even though this is a lowly team in the MLB, you kind of felt as though, okay, this is the Tigers we've been waiting on. You know what I mean? But struggles, late inning struggles, when you have to rely on relief pitching, you know, you sit there and say, okay, what in the world is going wrong with this squad right now? No time to panic just yet, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, for the Tigers, the other thing I'd look at is their position in the standings. Because currently, I mean, remember how high and mighty the Chicago White Sox were sitting just 2 weeks ago? They were climbing a rock mountain without any harness, and they fell. They have been plummeting. They're 27-25 right now, third in the division. Kansas City is only 28-22. So I think, per usual, this is an overreaction. I think this is an over-exaggeration of Brad Ausmus's shortcomings and how much trouble this team is in. I mean, it's three in a row. And before that, they were regularly sweeping series or taking two of three. So I think it's more important to look in the large context of things. For people who wanted Brad Ausmus fired since day one, okay, I understand that. That's fair enough. But for anybody who's acting like this is anything new, nothing has changed for the Tigers. This is just how last season was progressing, and this is just how we expected, in many ways, things to start. You didn't necessarily expect the Tigers to come out of the gates as strongly as possible because Justin Verlander still needed maybe a little time to get back in the groove of things. He's shown that. Then you've got the Tigers figuring out their hitting rotation. You see a few new guys incorporated into the outfield like Cameron Maben, who made an immediate injection of life once he was. So I think this is more of a team that's getting it together. And yeah, there's a road bump, but it's 162 games. Come on. We're talking about three.
If there's anything I can say is that, again, and I've been saying this for years, the Tigers bullpen has to play better. The relief pitching has to play better. Countless times we've seen Justin Verlander take the mound, have solid outings, but then in late inning stretches of baseball, you have to rely on someone coming out the bullpen and mucking it up. Simple as that. That can't happen. And I've even seen this possible solution thrown out. Maybe you move one or two vets to the bullpen. Maybe you bring up some of those young guys who are relief pitchers. Let them start just to see what happens. But there has to be some sort of shakeup here to help vet that problem. I don't know. So, again, it's so early. You got a lot of baseball left to play, but same old problems. I don't know. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Hey, why not? Let's do it. Let's start early with our weekend winners. Weekend winners, where we take a look at the weekend that was in the sporting world and bring to you who we thought had the best weekend in the world of sports and beyond. Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's going to ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's going to ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's going to ever keep you down.
All right, folks, it is now time for Weekend Winners, where we take a look at the weekend that was in the world of sports and beyond and bring to you who we thought had the best weekend. So, of course, I got to start this thing, Isaac, with the Golden State Warriors. It is truly remarkable what this team has been doing all year. Again, coming back from being down 3-1 in a series and pulling that off in the Western Conference Finals, it was pretty remarkable stuff. Only the 10th team to do that in NBA history. So I'll start off this thing by saying, hey, salute to Steve Kerr and company.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good first one. And there's really no other way you could start this if you had gone another place. I would have, of course, stolen that one and made that my primary weekend winner. But instead, I'll go soccer. And yes, soccer is finally
you're
the end.
You're stealing my thunder.
But
yes, I know where you're going with
this story. This is an important event. It really is. Yeah, yeah. So Real Madrid captured their second Champions League final in 3 years, and they did over Atletico Madrid in series rivals. This is a competition that spans across Europe. Every single team in a European league has a chance to win it. So one team winning twice in 3 years, that's pretty impressive. And they did it in penalty kicks, the most dramatic fashion you could imagine. It was a good game. I actually hate Real Madrid personally because they are the Yankees of soccer. No salary cap. They buy all the good players. But even so, it's impressive. It's nice.
You didn't steal my thunder, Isaac. You don't know where I'm going with this in the world of soccer? Prepare for this story, okay? A professional soccer player was kidnapped in Mexico.
I know
and
it now.
I could not believe this story when I heard it. So a professional soccer player was kidnapped in Mexico on Saturday night. Now, since then, he's been rescued. His name is Alan Pulido. You ever heard of him before, Isaac? Is he
not
a big-time
until
player?
The kidnapping.
Not until the kidnapping.
He's at a big place. Olympiacos is a good team.
Right. Well, get this. So, yeah, he's a 25-year-old, player. A striker for Greece's Olympiacos. How do you say it?
Olympiacos.
Olympiacos. See, that's why I don't even... me and soccer don't mesh well. But, yeah, he plays for that club, who also played in the past for Mexico's national team. He was kidnapped Saturday night, and he was rescued shortly before midnight on Sunday in what's being called, quote, a city operation in conjunction with the federal government. Now, it's so crazy because if you look at the details of the story, it said that Alan Pulido, his kidnappers, I guess they were at first two in the room. One leaves the room and he's just sitting there alone with the other kidnapper. The kidnapper had a weapon. He somehow wrestles the weapon from the guy and is able to escape, make a call, and then gets rescued. How bossy is that, dude? That's nuts, isn't it? I couldn't believe that story when I heard it.
Really is amazing. And you know what's sad is there are so many kidnappings relatively in soccer compared to other sports, just because soccer really appeals to a lot of impoverished countries compared to the U.S., just where the governments and the police forces aren't as active for any crime problems here. Of course, you don't mean to diminish those, but at the same time, other countries just don't have the power to stop kidnappings of professional athletes. So
yeah, it's nuts.
I hate to say it,
politics.
But this is not the first time that I've seen this story, and maybe it didn't catch my eye as much as it should have, but it's a great story.
But the way he got out of it, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, okay? It's a boss move.
He just wrestles the guy to the ground, takes his weapon, and just, he's like 007, dude. Like Tom Cruise from Mission Impossible. So that's absolutely nuts. So looking at, because I'm reading ABC News here, again, after 24 hours after he was kidnapped, he found himself alone with one of his captors, saw his chance, he wrestled away the man's pistol and his cell phone. So he took away his cell phone and his pistol and dialed Mexico's emergency number. Within minutes, he was free. That's nuts. That's the best story I saw all weekend, folks. And also, again, the Indy 500 took place, and Alexander Rossi was the victor of that. So want to give a shout-out to Alexander Rossi. Did you catch it all? This is one of my confessions I always make here on the show. I just cannot sit down, dude, stare at my television, and watch a bunch of cars go in circles. I just can't do it. I don't know. I may be bashing the sport, but I just can't sit there. It's not entertaining to me to sit down and watch NASCAR or the Indy 500. I just can't watch it, man.
Well, in fairness, the Indy 500 and IndyCar is better because the tracks aren't just circuits. They're creative. They go through cities. But no, I have never watched more than 5 minutes consecutively of either of those sports. I can't do it.
If I watched it, Isaac, it was on accident. Like, it was just, okay. Just happened to be on. It was on TV. It just pops on and just happens to be on my TV.
Exactly.
I did not intentionally put my channel to NASCAR, okay?
Now, a sport that many think would run almost continuous with that is cycling. But, and I just,
can you watch cycling?
That's my last weekend winner. I can watch cycling all the day.
Stop it, really?
It's interesting. They go through cool landscape, and actually, that's my last weekend winner. Vincenzo Nibali
won
the 99th Giro d'Italia.
Okay. Oh, nice. Oh, that's a very good weekend
winner. Very impressive.
Cycling has to be more appealing than NASCAR, though, because, again, the scenery is changing. So I guess I can see where you're going with that, but watching a bunch of people on bikes just ride bikes, I don't know. I couldn't do it.
You've got a bike to appreciate sort of the work
yeah,
that goes into it.
That's personal to you. You're a biker, so that's definitely personal
for me. I do 25 miles, and I've got my day's worth of exercise. These do 150
yeah,
a day
that's
for 20
nuts.
Straight days. It's unbelievable.
That
talk
is,
about a real Iron Man.
Talk about stamina, right? Man, I can't talk today. Tuesdays, man. Well, it feels like a Monday.
It's a Monday. It really is.
But shout out to Alexander Rossi, folks. But we have less than 1 minute left here in the show. We'll be back at it same time, same place on tomorrow's show. And much thanks to Jason Ruff for joining us on today's Current Sports. You have been listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. We'll be back at it, folks, tomorrow. Have a fantastic afternoon and be easy, people.